6 points out of a possible 9, a transfer deadline day signing, and one of our biggest earners off the wage bill. All that plus the takeover's been completed. So, a bit of a quiet couple of weeks since we've been away, but welcome back. This is the Tile West End podcast, episode number 35. My name's Dan Wimbush, I'm the editor of the Tile West End, and I am joined, as always, by Mr. Adam West, otherwise known as Westy.
Hello, pleased to be here.
And Mr. Johnny Williams, who is the deputy editor at the Tile West End. Johnny?
I'm dressed up in my running kit as well. I've come quite formal today, in a sense.
He's coming full kit.
Yeah, full kit, yeah. Shorts.
And the boots. He made me take the boots off at the front door.
Mm. Yeah, well, you know, etiquette now with that.
Got mud on them.
But yeah, it's been a couple of weeks since we recorded. Apologies for no show last week. Westy failed a late fitness test.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that, everyone.
The Reading injury curse doesn't just extend to the playing staff. It now is filtered out to the fan sites and podcasts.
What is going on in the training, eh? What is going on?
I don't know. I don't know what you did last week.
I was in bed.
Too much heavy running, was it?
A little bit, yeah. Too much.
Anyway, we are back. I said a couple of weeks since we last spoke. We spoke just after the Middlesbrough game and before transfer deadline day. So we've got quite a bit to go through. 3 games, as mentioned, quite a bit of transfer activity. And news off the pitch as well with the long-running takeover saga finally at an end. But we'll start with the most recent result, which was the game up at Sheffield Wednesday, Reading losing 1-0 here to end what had previously been a really good week on a little bit of a low. But as I said, you know, we'll get the bad news out of the way first. So 1-0 defeat. What did you make of the game, Johnny? I know you were watching.
Yeah, it was just a very scrappy game, to be honest. I mean, you know, we were doing the sort of live blog on the website, trying to put up the chances, you know, sort of BBC Sport live game day sort of thing. And there weren't really that many chances to put up. I mean, obviously the penalty that Murray misses, you've got Cooper having a header. And then pretty much, you know, they score from their only shot on target. And that's only because it's a deflected free kick. It was one of those that's sort of a bit of a midfield battle. No one really creating any clear-cut chances. And, I think it was a game that no one deserved to lose, but no one deserved to win. And ultimately, it was going to come from a bit of a freak goal like that.
Yeah, Weston, we mentioned we joked about the injury crisis, and it certainly affects us for this game as we lose Adam Federici and Michael Hector late on, bringing in Jake Cooper and Mikel Anderson for full debuts. What was your reaction when you heard those two were starting?
I wasn't overly surprised. I thought if there's injuries, we are sort of down to the bare bones as it is. But I didn't think, Anderson didn't have anything to do during the match. I suppose the only thing you could say about Cooper was his slight naivety with his defending when he'd done a stupid handball on the edge of the box that ultimately cost him the game. But I sat and watched this game as well, and I thought Reading were more than value for money for at least a draw, and you wouldn't have been too surprised if they had won it. I mean, especially near the end, I think we forced sort of 6 or 7 corners on the bounce, and we looked for most of them that we could score goals from corners. I know their goalkeeper made a good save from one, we hit the crossbar, and a few dropped from them, we couldn't get shots off, but I think Atkins would be disappointed, and I'm disappointed they at least didn't come away with something, because Sheffield Wednesday didn't look like any sort of force that they did last year when they absolutely pummeled us.
No, absolutely. I think that the goal, the deflected free kick, was their first shot on target. And the only thing, my only complaint is the wall was shocking for
the
goal.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
It was completely unorganised. I think there was about 8 men in it by the end. They were all spread quite far apart, legs far apart as well. I think it hits in. Couldn't see exactly who it hit, but pings off someone's inside of their leg and completely wrong foot to Anderson. Not a lot he could do about it.
No.
Although you could argue that he should set the wall up better. But again, that's the problem when you have an inexperienced goalkeeper.
Well, that's the two that was brought in, both inexperienced. I suppose you could point Anderson and could have done a better organising job. But I don't think it'd be harsh to say that it was anything to do with him. But it's just a shame that I was going on such a high off the back of a couple of wins. Mm. And you expect him to go up there and at least score. Mm. And they didn't manage to do it. So,
I mean, the thing is, this is Anderson's first ever Reading appearance, I think, in any competition. And yet he's been at the club, what, 7, 8 years?
Yeah, he's one of the longest serving.
Yeah, he's been around a while.
And this is, including cups, including league, including every competition, this is his first ever Reading appearance, because he's always been behind two other keepers, like Hanneman Federici McCarthy.
Yeah.
I found that completely incredible. So, and he's certainly got the experience. He's been out on loan at, 5 or 6 different clubs. He should know how to set up a wall. I'm not necessarily pinning the blame on him.
No.
That. But, and with, you know, with Jake Cooper, I mean, he's looked capable in the games that he's played so far, I think. If Hector's injury turns out to be a bit worse, and obviously Ferdinand is out for a while as well, would we look at getting someone else in? I'm not quite so sure. because you don't want to be putting the pressure on these youngsters immediately.
I tell you what, he does cause a bit like Morrison. Really, he does cause a major threat from corners because there's not too many headers he misses because he's a big lad, big strong lad, isn't he? And I noticed that a lot of the corners they hit long where Pearce would normally go and stand long and head it back in, and it did cause a lot of problems. And another day they'd have had two or three goals from him. But it's just unfortunate. But it's been, the last two games has been typical Championship football. It could have gone either way, and unfortunately this week it went Sheffield Wednesday's way.
Yeah, I mean, I just closing the book on Cooper, I'm pretty happy with his debut, really, for someone who's never really played league football before to come in at a crunch away game in front of 30,000 people at Hillsborough as well. Yeah. You know, that's a big ask. And yeah, he had a couple of clumsy moments, could have given away a penalty and for the free kick. But otherwise, he was solid and, you know, he's done the job when he's come on for the last 5 minutes a couple of times as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. I'd like to go back just quickly to the penalty. And,
and
whenever there's a wrestle for the ball, you know that whoever takes it is going to miss, don't you? You just get this sinking feeling like, oh, don't argue over a penalty. Just let Blackman take it.
AD Williams made a great point on the radio. Why hasn't Nigel Adkins set a set priority list for the penalties
before
the game?
But I think this was a bit of a reaction to... was it Fulham or Millwall?
Millwall.
Yeah, it was Millwall, where Blackman, you know, he was fouled in the box. He got up straight away, ran over to get the ball from the east stand and took the penalty and scored it. I think that was almost a direct reaction to from Murray.
Yeah, I think probably, technically, Murray's the penalty taker.
Yeah.
But because Blackman was the one who's fouled for the penalty, he took it. And because he scored, he's thinking, well, why should I take the next one? And arguments for it now is he should take him because he scored as Murray.
He's got quite a good penalty record, hasn't he? He scored one at Bolton last year, I remember, early season. I think he got another one last year, but
Sheffield United, didn't he? I think he took him there. So, again, if it weren't broke, don't fix it. They should have just let him take the penalty.
It wasn't the worst penalty I've ever seen from Glenn Murray. It's pretty hard. I think the keeper got a bit lucky. It just sort of flicked off the bottom of his legs, didn't it? But he also had another half chance as well where the ball just sort of bobbled up right at the last minute and it went over the bar and I said a header that hit the bar. So, I mean, we might as well talk about it now, really. Glenn Murray was our deadline day signing. What have you made for him? And this takes us back nicely into the two games earlier this week.
Do you know who he reminds me of every time I look at him? Jimmy Quinn.
Yeah.
He runs in the exact same manner. He's exactly the same player.
He's got that old school look to him, hasn't he?
He's even got that little bit of attitude that Quinny had. Because if you look at his reaction when he gets subbed, I'm not sure what, you know, I'm hoping it's just frustrated in himself rather than, you know, annoyed Nigel Adkins. But Quinny used to have that little bit of annoyance, didn't he? Yeah.
But then you like that. I suppose you don't want players running off the pitch happy about it, do you?
No.
That's never a good sign.
Royston.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I thought if you look at him, he plays exactly the same as Jimmy Quinn, and the further away you see him from, you think it's Jimmy Quinn reincarnated, to be honest.
Yeah, and he got off to the best possible start. I know we're going completely out of chronological order, but, you know, it's our podcast. We'll do what we want to.
Do what we want.
Two goals on his debut against Fulham in what is easily the best Reading performance this season.
Yeah.
Aided by Fulham being absolutely woeful.
Weren't they little? Weren't they such a little side? And you think that team ain't going to cope in a championship. They're far too small.
Well, you'd heard all the sort of horror scare stories about Felix Magath and how Fulham were playing badly, but you just thought, oh, it's one of these things where a team gets relegated and they'll snap into it. Who better than Reading to play? But awful. Absolutely awful from start to finish. And just quickly on Felix Magath, did you read the story in the paper this morning?
About a block of cheese.
About the block of cheese. If you haven't read this story, and I apologise to the author, I can't remember where this came from. Apparently Magath, a player was suffering from, I think it was Hangerland.
Yeah,
suffering from a knee injury or something along these lines. And the physio was just like, oh, you need to just rest this up and not do an activity. Magath just interrupted and went, told the physio, go down to the local supermarket and buy a block of cheese. And he got, no joke, Hangland to sit there on this block of cheese because he thought it would soothe the injury. I'm not even making this up.
Do you think he's trying to get a sack?
Well, if you looked at his mannerism when he was sat in the dugout on Saturday, it was hard, last Saturday even, it was hard not to argue because he'd given up.
Not only that, when they interviewed him, you could hardly understand a word he was talking about anyway, so it's no surprise the team don't seem to be together because they ain't got a clue what he's on about.
Everybody hated him by all accounts. The fans were completely against him. It's always funny when both sides are singing sacked in the morning. And you know he has lost his job. Kit Simons came in, and you know he lost his first game as well. But it's a team in free fall, and they've got to watch out because Wolves have shown.
But go back to Murray. So before we move on, talking about Murray, Nicky Forster was talking about Murray the other day because he played together at Brighton for a little while.
Yeah,
and he said that Murray is great when a ball is crossed into the box. He said he'd win them sort of headers all day long, and that's how both his goals come from, didn't they? Balls go into the box. Since the last two games, I didn't think he played particularly well yesterday. I thought he got a little bit run away from us. It's one of those days we got a bit frustrated. But I think that's what Reading got to do. The old style, like I used to do when Coppell's here, get the ball wide and get it in the box. Yeah. And that's how he scored his goals.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, that's exactly how the first couple of goals came against Fulham. First one, a lovely ball from Obita. Oh, exactly the area you want it in, that corridor of indecision.
Yep.
Diving header, gets a slight deflection, but it's probably going anyway. And then the second corner from Jordan Obita, and you know, he's there to nod at home. And Nick Blackman got a good third as well. The only other point, just in that Fulham game, Matt Smith, the gift that keeps on giving. I remember watching him come on at Sheffield Wednesday for Leeds last year and get sent off within about 10 seconds.
Yep.
And he lasts, what, 19 minutes on his debut?
He didn't even argue it though, did he? As soon as the foot went up, he knew he was going to get sent off.
There was one thing I didn't like about that though, and that's if you watch the replays, Alex Pearce, when the ref shows the red card, he sort of turns away and puts his hands up like in celebration. Which, you know, I mean, obviously you're pleased that you've got a man sent off, but you don't sort of celebrate that as if you just scored.
Matt Smith should have known that if he'd left Hope Backpan alone, he probably would have tackled himself after a while.
Yeah, that's right.
But actually, no, I shouldn't bash Hope Backpan actually. He's probably enjoying the best spell of his Reading career, because I thought in that game he was good. He was pretty decent as well in the Millwall game, and didn't have too much of an impact up at Wednesday. But
no, he's been steady, and he's the player that sort of no one realises out there sometimes, not because he doesn't do anything, it's just because he doesn't get any credit for what he does do. Mm. And it is stick his foot in, and I think someone just said to him, look, Hope, just give it to whoever's closest to you, and as long as he does that, he's fine.
For me, his form has been improved tenfold since he got paired alongside Oliver Norwood, who is now my easily my favourite player in that squad.
He's good. That pass he hit the other day at home, when he didn't even look, he just one touch, bang, it out to the wing, right on mate's foot. I mean, his passing repertoire has been brilliant, and I think Guthrie is going to struggle to get back in that side, because I don't see them playing together, so it's going to be difficult for him to get back in that.
If you check out, we've got a new stats desk on the website at thetalesden.com. We're running regular analysis and previews of games, and if you look at these passing charts from those couple of games, they, you know, make for great reading. As I said, just head over to thetalesden.com for that. But yeah, just brilliant. It's just, you love a player that can do it and just ping a ball out there. It's just,
again, he's an Atkins player, isn't he? He's obviously said to him, look, we want to get the ball wide and we want to get out there quickly, because we was moaning at the start of the season he was moving the ball far too slow. And now we haven't got Morrison and Norwood's come into the side, the ball seems to be moving a hell of a lot quicker.
And he just makes everybody else comfortable around him, because they know they've got that outlook ball.
Trust him.
The only worry for me is that Danny Guthrie had this sort of a purple patch this time last season as well, where he was dictating the play, playing not quite maybe such exquisite passing, but being as influential, teams very quickly figured it out. Two men on him, close him down, you close down Reading.
And this is what we come to with the Millwall game, with the substitution after, 25 minutes, 30 minutes, when we were looking very, very comfortable, 2-0 in front, and then Holloway makes a change, and suddenly for the next 60 minutes, we can't get the ball. I don't think we had a shot on target until we scored. We certainly didn't boss the possession either.
I'll say one thing about that game against Millwall. I mean, technically, I thought at the end of it, Reading were lucky they did win the game, because I thought Millwall were a better side for periods of that match, especially before we scored. I mean, they had a great, and Federici made some good saves in this, although he can't command his 6-yard box with love nor money, right? But what I was going to say to it is, what amazed me about it, and this is why I wasn't too upset with Lafondre leaving the club, when Cox got that ball for that first goal, he had two players behind him, he outmuscled them, then he outrun them, and then he side footed one in for 20 yards. You know, I mean, you wouldn't have seen Lafondre score a goal like that in a million years. Mm. It's just the fact that he can do it on his own and he didn't need anyone around him. I think we've got a player that's cost us half as much as Lafondre went for, but it's twice as good in my opinion.
I think in Cox and Murray, you've definitely got an upgrade on Pogrebniak and Lafondre.
Definitely. You've got much more mobility and you've got a player that can score goals out of nothing.
Yeah, and Murray is a bit of a mix of both Pog and Alfie, which is what we've been missing. Yeah. Someone like a Jason Roberts that can get goals but can also lead the line. Because Pog was leading the line pretty well, but he wasn't getting the goals.
He wasn't.
Lafondre was doing the opposite.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely. I suppose you could put him sort of a little bit above Pog and below Roberts as a player at the moment, from what I've seen of him.
What do you make of Pog's future prospects at the club at the moment? Because we've seen him come on a couple of times as a sub since Murray signed, but I think he's got much of a future now at the club.
How many years has he got left on his contract?
Two.
I mean, he's here for that.
He got a 4-year deal when he signed, so this season and next season.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, he's not going anywhere else, is he?
No.
Let's be honest. And I think Adkins sort of realises that. I mean, obviously he still likes Pog, obviously he's still in his plans, but aside from Pog, we never really had another option beside Murray. And I think there will be situations where you might put Pog on instead of Murray, or, you know, I mean, obviously Pog's been injured, so that's why he hasn't been playing. But I think it's a good option to have off the bench, isn't it? When you've got a big Russian who's on 30, 40k, however much he's on, let the rumours continue.
He's good when you're defending a lead, but if you're getting a goal, you don't necessarily think, oh, we'll chuck on Pog. I mean, he didn't against Millwall, did he?
But no. I wouldn't think the same if we chucked on Murray. I think Murray is one of those players that's got to start. I think he's more effective as a starter, sort of wearing teams down, because I don't think he strikes me as a particularly a later game player rather than an earlier game player.
I still think he's a quality player, though.
I'm not doubting that.
For getting goals.
Yeah, I think the good thing for Paul Grebnak is it should push him to do better. You know what I mean? Not that he's been bad, but with the new players here and the fact that we are a lot stronger up front now than we were last year, I think everyone would have to agree with that. For Paul Grebnak sitting on the bench, if he's got any sort of self-respect for himself, he's going to think, right, when I get on there, I need to do better. And it can only push him all to do better as a force, as a unit.
Yeah, I mean, the Millwall game did throw up one of our other frailties, and that's the defence. And I think up to that point, we conceded something like 9 goals this season, which is quite a lot already. And that figure obviously only went up when we went up to Sheffield Wednesday as well. But there's something, and I wrote the 5 things this week for the Fulham Millwall games again. Shameless plug, tyresend.com. Read it. I wrote it, and I said, I can't put my finger on what's going wrong with the defence or why we're conceding goals. We just seem to have a knack.
I think the problem is, you know, if you see when we line up at a goal kick, you've got, or even when we're attacking, you've got the 2 strikers and the 2 wingers right pushed up. And that basically means that the wing backs are exposed. And this was a tactic that Millwall did 3 or 4 times. Pinged it out to their left back, and he had Gunter one-on-one.
Yeah, Gunter got caught a couple of times.
Yeah, first one, he went straight past Gunter, had a shot, and it got saved, and the rebound got saved as well. The second one, he went past him again and had another shot, and it was saved. The third one, Gunter stood off because he'd already been done twice, and that was when he passed it inside to Fuller, and Fuller scored. I don't know whether it's because Mackie wasn't tracking back or whether he's just been told to stay forward. Yeah. And it's almost one of those where it's a bit of a game of cat and mouse, where you've got to either decide, right, just let them win their one-on-one matchups, or track them all the way back, track them all the way forward, sort of thing. So, and let's not forget, Ibiza is still not a natural left back. I think he's still going to be learning his trade at this time. So teams probably look at us and say, okay, well, we've got Gunter one-on-one, we've got Ibiza who probably isn't the most solid in attack, or let's attack those. And because our wingers are so far forward, they're not getting any cover.
Yeah, no, I think we certainly was a little bit slow in getting back as well when we had attacks breaking down. But I thought Millwall, again, they could have had quite a few goals. If Federici wouldn't have made a number of saves, it would have been a different outcome. And again, like I said earlier, that's Championship football for you. Could have gone either way.
Yeah, and that's why I think you do need another defender alongside Pearce that is more mobile, like Hector, that can cover a bit of ground if the fullback gets caught out of position. And again, maybe a slightly more mobile defensive midfielder than Hopakpan as well.
Things we weren't great at the back last year, wasn't we? We conceded a lot of cheap goals last year as well, so there's definitely something wrong there.
Well, and I think that's one of the reasons that Chobi Mackenough came back in the side, didn't he? Because he added a lot of stability down the left.
Steady up a bit of experience, I suppose.
Whereas when you're playing Nick Blackman and Jamie Mackie, both are really forward-thinking players who are both hard workers and they're going to do their best, but they've not got that natural awareness to switch on. And
I mean, we've moaned about Robson Kanu quite a lot when he's played left wing as well, because he'd do the same sort of thing. He does tend to get lost forward rather than looking what's behind him. So, yeah, but we are going to concede goals, but I think we're going to throw out score teams. It's as simple as that. Yeah.
Well, overall then, 6 points out of 9. If I'd offered that to you at the start of the week, would you have taken it?
Probably yes.
I think you would. I think it's sort of results that we expected. And who would have expected that Millwall would be a harder game than Fulham at the start of the season?
Yeah.
I think if you'd said to me you'd get a point out of Fulham and Sheffield Wednesday and a win over Millwall, I'd have been fairly happy with that. So getting 6 points. I mean, that's promotion when you form 6 out of 9.
Yeah,
so.
It's, like I said before, though, I still think there's plenty more to come for Red. I think there's another 15, 20% to come out of that team at some point. And I think as long as they can stick in it till Christmas, they'll be there or thereabouts.
Well, there's about another 15, 20 players to come in.
There's much more to come from that team. And even the young players, there's more to come from. It's not as if they've peaked. They're still learning their trade.
And the other nice thing is nobody's running away with this division. Even Nottingham Forest, who, you know, it looks like they were, you know, steaming ahead early doors. They've been pegged back a bit this week with a draw against Derby. They're not even beating a Millwall side that Reading beat. Yeah. So, doesn't look like, you know, there are stronger teams, but it's still anyone's up for grabs, so early doors.
It'll probably end up being like it is every year in the Championship. You can be in the playoffs and be 20 points from relegation, you know what I mean? It'd be somewhat ridiculous where teams get beat every week and teams beat teams and you have odd results here and there, like it always is in the Championship. And rarely does anyone run away with it, and this year looks no different, really.
Absolutely. Right, well, that just about wraps up our thoughts on those 3 matches this week. Let's just move on to some News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Right, welcome along to News Bites. A few bits and pieces to talk over then. As I mentioned, we haven't spoken since transfer deadline day happened. We've already talked about the Glenn Murray signing in terms of what he's brought performance-wise, but I suppose break down the deal a little bit. The one thing for me that was very surprising is that after all this talk, Reading only actually managed to get him in on loan. Johnny, what do you think the reasoning behind that was? Why didn't they get Murray on a permanent basis?
Well, I mean, I think there's possibly two reasons for it. One is the injury that he's coming back from. I guess, you know, we wanted to see and not necessarily take the gamble on it that, you know, we might be stuck with him for another 2 years. As we've just seen, I mean, he's played, what, 250 out of 270 minutes in the last week? So clearly it's not ailing him at all. The other possible reason is we just didn't quite get it done in time. I'm not so sure about that one. Maybe we couldn't free up the funds either. I think possibly, well, depending on which side the agreement to buy the player is on, it could be that Warnock sort of, you know, might have a look at him in January and say, no, actually, come back here, we need a bit of help. Yeah. But generally, these deals are sort of done that, you know, what? It's in our option to buy him.
Westies, yeah, it's been reported that Reading have got an option, it's Reading's option for a £1.5 million transfer. Do you reckon that would be decent? Decent value?
I think, firstly, if that is the deal, I think Reading have been quite shrewd because, like I say, he has had a bad injury. He is over 30 as well, which is rare, not so rare in recent years, but in general rare that Reading will spend that sort of money on a player that's got no resale value because, let's face it, if he gets to 32, you're not going to get £1.5 million for him.
No.
So, basically, it's money they're gambling away, and I think they've been quite shrewd in keeping him here till January, having a good look at him and then deciding then. But I don't see him not signing him as long as he doesn't break down. So I think, yeah, I think it's good for both parties, really.
Yeah. Well, one in on deadline day and one surprising out. We talked about a few players that might leave.
Shock.
And we joked about this man. What was your exact quote on him, Westy?
Unprofessional something.
Unprofessional joke.
Joke. Football.
That was the one, yeah.
That's on.
And someone's taken a punt on this unprofessional joke of a player.
Yeah.
It just happens to be the team that beat us on Saturday.
Interestingly enough, I don't know if you looked at Sheffield Wednesday's fan sites. Someone had done a report on Drenthe's first game. And
yeah.
It was so funny. Someone's put on there, he'd done 6 step overs, then he fell over the ball.
He put up a couple of highlights on Instagram and what it's like a cross and just random stuff.
Yeah.
Do you know what? As much as I don't really like him as a professional footballer, he's pretty good with fans. He's good banter.
He's entertaining, isn't he?
He knows how to play the PR, let's put it
that
way.
He does. But anyway, Sheffield Wednesday have taken him off our hands for 6 months. Now, the one snag to this deal might be the fact that Sheffield Wednesday looked like they were about to be taken over when this deal was signed, and then a couple of days after Drenthe signs on loan, the takeover collapses. Sound familiar? So I don't know what the status is long term, but the good news is Reading have got him off the book for 6 months. And even if it is, you know, 5% of his wages, or hopefully it's more than that, but you know, it frees up some money, gets him away from the group. And we've heard Charles say on the podcast Extra how much he thinks training and the atmosphere around the place is better since he's gone.
Yeah.
But it just amazes someone's taken a punt. But I guess Sheffield Wednesday are hoping that they'll finally be that club that unlocks his potential.
Yeah, there will always be a club that will take Drenthe in the hope that one day they can find a player that he could be. But unfortunately, it will never happen because he's an unprofessional joke footballer.
Well, it all. He's not the Messiah.
Well, no other deals, and that might be a bit of a mistake judging by how things have gone since deadline day, because the injury curse just seems to be getting worse. Amongst the news, Danny Williams says he doesn't expect to be back running till around November, which you would imagine
January,
around Christmas at the earliest. Jem Carracher mentioned he's had a little bit of a setback when he was talking to Reddy at Berkshire the other day. So again, you know, he's not even taken part in a reserve team game yet or started serious training. So it took for a while for him. Gareth McCleary as well. Looks like November, December still. And as we mentioned, Federici and Hector, no timetable given there, but just joining it, a never-ending list. The only bright spot was that Danny Guthrie has come back into the fold. He came on for 10 minutes at Sheffield Wednesday. Johnny, bit of a laugh there.
Where does he go? I mean, you can't put Norwood and Guthrie in the same team because they are the same person.
And you can't put Paul Grebnak and Murray in the same team because they're basically the same sort of player.
So, you know, we've got two players for just about every position.
Well, hold on to that thought because we have a question on Guthrie. Okay. In the question section. So won't spoil Chris's good question.
Yep.
But anyway, a couple of bright spots. But otherwise, the injury list is just getting bigger. Anton Ferdinand as well.
It's ridiculous.
He's injured after.
How did he injure himself? Getting out of his Mercedes or something? It's ridiculous, isn't it?
He is, as I said, he's out as well for a month. So he's not back till after the international break that comes up in October. It's looking very thin on the ground, as we mentioned. And Johnny, surely it's time for Nijakis to dip into the loan market. He needs some experience back up in that back line.
I think he does. And I think they've got to be sort of these loans of the 93-day emergency variety because, as we've just pointed out with the squad, when everyone's fully fit, we've got a very, very good sort of 20-25-man squad.
Yeah.
So whether there's going to be anyone that's, you know, left out of a Premier League side or someone that, a Championship side doesn't need, I'm thinking of... Joseph Mills. Didn't we get him from...
We did, Southampton.
Southampton, yeah. Okay. And Southampton win the Championship as well. Yeah. You know, whether there's a sort of player like that that we can possibly get to back up at left-back or at centre-back as well, I think that's certainly one option to go. I mean, when you said that, is it time Nigel Adkins looked at, I thought you were going to talk about the training ground methods. Because this is Federici and Hector, and they, by my knowledge, they didn't pick up a knock against Millwall.
No.
Ferdinand, he hasn't seen any of the pitch, so he's clearly done something on the training ground.
Fell out of his Mercedes.
Hold on, I'll try and defend. You can't on. Let's be fair. Reading surely would not, with all the medical expertise and knowledge and training methods. Surely they're not doing anything that's.
I think there's too much nowadays. I think they give them too much. It's like these warm downs and after matches. What's that all about? It's nonsense.
But Dan, this is something I've been saying for like the last 6 or 9 months that we seem to be picking up loads of injuries.
Yeah.
And now we've got two right down the spine of our team on the training ground.
Do you remember the good old days when everyone played all season? You might have one injury, maybe a shock, wouldn't it? Someone gets a broken leg, they're still out
there.
Look at
that 05-06 team. Rock solid all the way through, I think. You get a couple of players missed a couple of games and later broke his ankle in March. That was about it.
Yeah, it's better than a week, you know what I mean? Just get on with it.
Parky just used to, you know, break his nose. He's back in a face mask the next week.
Strap it up, get on.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, Keith McPherson playing the playoff final with a broken foot.
There you go.
Hard.
See,
man.
That's it. That's what proper footballers in them days.
Indeed.
When men were men.
Indeed. Right. The injury crisis not looking like getting better anytime soon. Adkins and Hammond have both come out and said that they are looking, you know, they are open to bringing in loans. But as you mentioned, it's got to be the right player. And with the squad as big as it is, when the injuries clear up, you can't go and sign too many players. But they just need someone like a Baird. They picked up on a free last season. Yeah. And he's back in the Premier League now.
The thing is, with his continued cup run, you are stretching the squad that's already stretched, don't you? Because they can't not play him because that's all they've got to play.
I think this cup run's going to come to an end soon.
It might do. The thing is, you don't never know. I mean, they might well go to Derby, and Derby don't take it too seriously, and they go through to the next round. It's just, I don't think anyone's that bothered about the League Cup. And what's he going to do then? He's got to play the strongest side because that's all we've got left.
Mm. Yeah, and we'll preview the Derby game in just a few minutes' time. that's just about wraps up all the news for this week. The only other thing to mention is Michael Hector was given the club's official player of the month. Apparently it was voted on by fans. I can't say I actually saw where the vote was, but no. if I missed it somewhere, I do hold my hands up and apologise.
Hard to disagree with it, though. I thought he'd been excellent. I think his reading of the game has been excellent.
You say that, but we did run our own poll on thetireslayer.com for your player of the month, and Hector was on the shortlist, and I think he received something like 7% of the votes, was it?
He came third. Pierce came second, Aaron Cool came first.
Who votes on these things?
Aaron Cool fans.
The Tylehurst End listeners. Your listeners.
Yeah.
They need to have a word with themselves.
Your audience.
I've really played about
them. Have a word with them now.
Calling out your audience.
I'm calling them out. No way.
Well, let's have a look at it. But it was based on league games.
It's his dad,
wasn't it? It was based on league games in August.
Yeah.
And those games were the win over, the draw at Wigan, the win over Ipswich, the defeat to Huddersfield, thrashing at Forest. And the win at Borough. And Cool was the only decent player to play against Huddersfield. He had a good shift at Forest in a bad team, and he didn't do too bad at Borough either. I think that's what got it for him. Hector, if you're just talking about league games, decent. He didn't play. He played in midfield in the first game at Wigan, did okay. Yeah. Second game, very good against Ipswich. Third game, gave away one of the goals. Fourth game, was part of a defence that leaked four.
Yeah, and I don't think you're really blaming him for that, though. It was a bit like
No, not blaming him at all, but I'm just saying that it's.
You're blaming him.
No, I'm not blaming him. But I suppose I do agree in terms that there wasn't an obvious candidate, but I just thought it was interesting.
It's nice that the young players are getting a vote in here.
Yeah.
Pierce is like the mainstay voting here. We've had a tough time. He's been all right. He's been steady.
But he's not...
6 out of 10.
Do you not think, Johnny, that maybe, you know, because Pierce is so solid, he won't necessarily get the credit he deserves?
Yeah, and when he's got a defence where he's, you know, sort of marshalling around people like Cooper and Hector... Gunter's obviously getting exposed on the right flank, and Abita, who, you know, is a left back but isn't. I think Pierce has done an admirable job, and I don't think you can necessarily say that any of our goals that we conceded have been directly down to Pierce, whereas I think you can pin a lot more individual goals on individual mistakes from other players.
Yeah, I suppose so. But it's nice that you get three players from the academy in the shortlist, which don't happen at many clubs, I would have thought.
Yeah, and Abita was on the shortlist as well.
Yeah.
And fifth player was, I can't remember right now.
Local lad's done good.
Absolutely. And it just, as I said, the amount of academy debuts this year has been mind-blowing.
And a credit to him.
Yeah, done very well. Okay, well, it's time to move on to Pub Chat this week, where we actually have a very special guest. So we'll introduce him just after this.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Right, welcome back to Pub Chat. A very special Pub Chat this week, as I'm delighted to say we are joined by former Reading footballer and member of the class of 92, Chris Casper. Chris, hello. Thanks very much for joining us.
Good evening.
Yeah, I mean, your time at Reading was short, but at least from my point of view, it was memorable because you came in at a time where there wasn't a lot of quality in that side. We'd just moved to the Medeski Stadium and you brought a little bit of star power to the Burns era. So it's great to have you on the show. But as much as we remember you for your time at Reading, I think most people elsewhere will remember you for your time at Manchester United, specifically in that class of 92. How did you get to that point? How did you get to United in the first place? How did you get into the game?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm local to Manchester anyway, so I was playing for Burnley, my town team, and was scouted by Joe Brown, playing for the under-15s. I went for trials at United, and there was quite a few kids there. There was hundreds of kids, really. Unfortunately, I made it through and signed my apprenticeship in 1991. So, you know, I was very fortunate to be able to do that. You know, the manager had made it clear to Eric Harrison, the youth team coach, that he wanted the youth set up to be a real focal point of the club, which it had been obviously with the Busby Babes and in the past, but had not been so in those in the 70s and 80s. So it was a great time for us. It was it was perfect for us. A lot of local lads as well. You know, like the likes of Nicky and Scholesy, Gary and Phil, and Ryan, obviously, to come through those times, yeah.
Did you have an appreciation, obviously, since you look at the players and obviously a glittering career for quite a number of them, but at the time, did you realise that this was a particularly special group, or did you just think, well, this is just our youth team, this is what we are?
No, there was only one, really. There was only Ryan, who was always going to be a superstar. I knew Ryan from been playing against him for Salford Boys and that when he was 13, 14. And he was always, totally different to everybody else. He was by far the best player at that age group. And the rest of us, like Gary was playing against him in Bury Town, against Bury Town team. Gary was a substitute, So it was, Scholes, he didn't play in the Class of 92 team. There was a lot of issues along the way that the players had to show resilience. It wasn't just a straightforward shoot to stardom, so to speak. The players had to come across some adversity, had to deal with it, and I suppose that's what's made them the players they are today. But as far as knowing from an early age that it was a special group, no, I don't think it was. Like I say, I think there was only Ryan who you could actually earmark as being a superstar from an early age, really.
Well, as I said, well known, you guys went on to win that Youth Cup in 92 and then slowly started drifting into the first team. I think you made your debut, what was it, 94 against Port Vale in the League Cup?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, I'd just come back from injury. I'd been involved with the first team. I was in there as a substitute. The Charity Shield against Blackburn when we won 2-0 at Wembley. But then I got injured just before, I think it was the opening game of the season in the reserves, and it put me back for a good couple of months and really affected me. So, but then I got back into the team against Port Vale and we won 2-0, I think, at Old Trafford.
Excellent. And you went on to make a couple more appearances. But like I said, like some of the other guys, like obviously Bex went out to Preston and whatnot. And you also had a couple of loan spells as well, going out to Bournemouth and Swindon. Was that... How did you feel, going out on loan? Was it the idea that, go out and get some games and come back and challenge for the team? Or was it, sort of, well, we can't really give you games here, you might, with an eye sort of a long-term move. What was the original thinking?
Yeah, no, I always went with the intention of learning from the experience and coming back and playing for the first team. It wasn't a fact of getting games. I was getting games in the reserves, and in those days, to be fair, the reserves was very competitive. You know, you'd play against an Alan Shearer or a Steve Ball or a Ian Ormondroyd or someone like that, you know, regularly. There were some really good games for you. But I just thought, for my development at that age, I went to Bournemouth when I was 20, and it was the right time for me to go. And, you know, the manager wanted to keep me for the European squad, but I needed a career. And the manager had bought Ronnie Johnson, Henning Berg, Jaap Stam. You know, so I knew it was going to be tough. I was always going to fight for a place, but at the end of the day, I needed to play games. And, you know, when you go on loan, it gives you an opportunity to do that.
Yeah, and one of the teams that you went on loan to was, of course, Reading. I believe it's Tommy Burns that signed you on loan during our first season at the Medeski. How did he sell the move to Reading to you?
Well, I mean, I think the manager and Tommy, my manager, Sir Alex, knew Tommy. I knew Tommy from, well, I didn't know him personally, but obviously his playing background when he was at Celtic, he was a Celtic legend as well. So I knew a little bit about him, and I came down, I knew Darren as well, Darren Kasky. So when I came down, the manager said, look, you know, it's a up-and-coming club. They've moved into a new stadium, blah, blah, blah. Tommy's a very, very good coach. You know, obviously, the manager wouldn't let me go to a club where I wasn't going to get treated right, and that the style of play was going to suit me, and Reading did, to be fair. So, you know, I was always, it was always a very, very good move for me, even though it was in the first division or League One as it would be now, and it was a step down that I didn't really want to take. But as far as a career's move's concerned, I could always see the progression the club was making. Obviously, John Majeski had invested a lot of money into the club, invested in players like Nicky Forster, Ady Williams, and people like this. So, you know, it was a no-brainer, really, to come down and get involved and, you know, like I say, get experience as well. And it worked out really well for me, I suppose.
Yeah, and I said the move was soon made permanent as well. Again, did it take a bit of convincing to finally sort of break away from Old Trafford?
I mean, yeah, I'm a northern lad, and obviously there's a lot of good clubs around here. But, you know, having worked with Tommy and Steve and Paddy Bonner, and I settled in really well there, it kind of felt right that the move was a good move for me. So, you know, when Tommy wanted to make it permanent, I think I'd had quite a decent run and a successful loan period. It seemed the right move for me. So, you know, I'd no problem in making that final, I suppose.
I mean, unfortunately for yourself, and I said it's no discredit to yourself personally, but a lot of Reading fans consider that some of our, you know, our darkest days in recent history, because for whatever reason, Tommy just couldn't get the team to click. From being in that squad and around the team at that time, why did it go wrong for Tommy? Why couldn't Reading kick on with such investment, with a new stadium behind him?
I don't know. We've got some good young players, maybe a little bit too young as well. To compete in a division like that, you've got to have a good mix and a good blend. And, you know, there was a real emphasis on youth. And I think, you know, given a chance, I think Tommy would have turned it around. I don't think there's any question about that. But, you know, it's just one of those things where it looked right on paper. The investment was right. The young players were right. The players he was bringing in, but it just needed a little bit of time to gel. And unfortunately, when you are spending quite a bit of money, you don't always get that amount of time. So unfortunately, it didn't work out for Tommy. But he was a fantastic coach and a lovely man. And you know, he's dearly missed as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a real shame as well, because it was a real period of optimism, I said, with the move to the stadium, and he did have such a good pedigree coming in. But, you know, sometimes these things don't work. I mean, you know, the current Liverpool manager only lasted 6 months at Reading, so, you know, these things can happen. But Alan Pardew then came in and took over just towards, I suppose, what is unfortunately the end of your time at Reading. But what did you make of Pards?
An outstanding coach for a start. You know, when I first got there, Pards was the reserve team coach, and unfortunately in the summer after I signed, I think the reserves got disbanded, so Pards lost his job. But then obviously when Tommy left, Pards was given the first team manager's role. And like I say, I think it, you know, it did make a difference. I think he struggled early doors, but eventually, once you know, once things got settled down, it did very well. But like I say, he's a very, very good coach, good manager. And you know, you look at the clubs he's gone on to manage. You know, West Ham, Southampton, and Newcastle. You know, they're big, big clubs. I mean, you don't go manage places like that if you've not got good credentials. So. And obviously, he was just starting out in his career. Probably made a few mistakes, like we all do. So, but yeah, he's gone on to prove what a good manager and a coach he is.
Who in sort of that Reading team did you really enjoy playing with? Who did you really like line up on the team with you?
Lindvoy Primus for me. You know, really, really nice guy, but tough as boots. You know, hard as nails on pins. You always knew what you were going to get with Lindvoy. He was, and again, went on to have a very, very good career. You know, a good quality players as well, like Darren Caskey, Nicky Forster, and unfortunately, I didn't get to play much with Eddie Williams, but I know he'd had a good first part to his career at Reading before he moved on to Wolves. Yeah, there's some, and obviously Phil Parkinson as well. You knew what you were going to get with Phil, so. Some good players, some very, very good players, yeah.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, I mean, Paz just started to turn it around around that Christmas time, and that's unfortunately when, you know, this you suffered the injury that would, as I said, very unfortunately go on to end your career. I obviously don't want to know too much on it, but I mean, what do you remember that day? Was that Cardiff, I believe, Boxing Day? Is that right?
Yeah, Boxing Day 99, 21 minutes past 12. Don't remember that much about it, really. it was, you know, it's one of those things where you look back and at the time it was very, very emotional, more than anything really. Obviously the physical side of it was very sore, very painful, but it was just a daft thing that Richard Carpenter did. You know, we've all been in those situations on a football field where, you know, you've overrun the ball and you know, you get a bit I don't know, you start lunging after things, and it was just a daft thing to say. It was just reckless, really, and, you know, there was no question that he'd gone out before the game to hurt me. That was never in question, and, I'm positive to this day that he'd never, ever would have thought about doing that. But it was just a daft thing to do in a meaningless part of the pitch as well, and those are the kind of things that you've got to deal with. Even today, you know, you look at my... you know, my playing partners from the past, like I say, Ryan's only just finished, and Gary and Scholes, they've only just finished as well, and the careers that they've had, and mine got cut short, you know, when I was 24, like say, an outstanding club with an up-and-coming manager that was turning the corner, and you never know what would have happened. Would have, you know, got back to playing in the Premier League eventually, or, you know, playing to a decent standard, I don't know. And those are the questions you've got to deal with on a regular basis, and you've got to deal with. But that's the hand you dealt with, and you've got to get on with it. There's nothing you can do about it.
Hey, Chris, Westy here. Sorry to got in on you there, mate. But are you still bitter about it? And how did you get past it when you knew that your career was over?
I'm not bitter about it now. No, like I say, I'm quite philosophical about life in general, really. I'm a firm believer of what you've been dealt, the hand that you've been dealt. You've got to deal with that. It was always going to happen. There's nothing you could have done about it. It wasn't my fault. So I've got to, you know, just move on from that. But most days you do think about it. What if? It's a question you've got to ask yourself. What if? I moved on really quickly, to be fair, Westy. I went straight into coaching at Bath University, and in a strange kind of a way, the role that I've got now and the job that I've got now, the man that I went to work for at Bath University is now my boss as well now. So it's funny how things work out. You can't live your life thinking what if, because you'd never get anywhere. You have got to move on. And I've got to be honest with you, at the time it was very, very tough, and psychologically it was a tough time in my life. I'm not going to deny that. I was fortunate. I've got a very strong wife and family around me, so that did get me through some pretty dark days as well, I've got to be honest.
Yeah, well, moving on to brighter times, and as you mentioned, you know, you got into coaching, and that eventually led you to Bury, and you know, you mentioned your local Northern lads, and you know, taking over. I believe at the time you were the youngest manager in the Football League. How did you get the gig at Gig Lane?
My dad was the first team coach, stroke assistant manager back in the early 80s, in the mid 80s, when Bury really took off, really. Won promotion from the fourth in the old fourth division, ended up in the championship, I think. So I've known the club for the best part of 30 years. When I moved back up from coaching at Team Bath, I got offered the youth team coaches role there, which I took, and had a couple of good years working with the youth team and the reserves. And then unfortunately, started 2005, I think, season. Graham Barrow, the manager, had a real tough start, to be fair. He only won one out of his first 10 games and got the sack. I got asked to take control of the team just as an interim part, really. But I had a couple of decent results and I applied for the job. Unfortunately, got the job and had 2.5 good years there, you know, and progressed the club, because we were in administration at the time, and it was a real, real tough times and a very, very poor budget. Had to do a lot of wheeling and dealing, didn't have a great backup staff, or a lot of them, but the staff that I did have were very, very good. And it taught me loads and loads of lessons, you know, for the future, I suppose. And it's quite funny, really. You know, some of these people, they go into really good jobs and, you know, they leave playing and they go into a big club and they get a coach's job and all the rest of it. As far as education and developing yourself is concerned, sometimes you're better off going to a club like that, because you're forever firefighting, you've got issues to deal with on a daily basis, nothing straightforward. You know, and that really did, you know, really did shape me, to be fair. It was a great 2.5 years. I'll never regret taking that job.
Did you get a lot of support from Sir Alex?
Yeah, always at the end of the phone, offering his advice. And you know, I mean, he's got that many people to speak to, because he's dealt with that many people. So, but yeah, you know, he's very, very helpful, as a lot of people were. You know, football can be seen and perceived as a little bit of a nasty injury, a nasty industry at times. But there are some good people, you know, and they're always willing to help you.
Just curious as well, as you know, I mentioned you were, you know, one of the youngest ever managers at the time. Do you think age helped or hindered you, or was it not really a factor?
No, it hindered me. I wouldn't say, looking back on it, I was totally prepared. I wasn't expecting the job. It wasn't something that, you know, I'd focused on or anything like that. So, but I definitely wasn't ready for it, as far as management's concerned. I was okay as a coach. I'd just passed my A licence and got my qualifications and that, but management's completely different. And I've gone on to do some management courses since and realised that if I'd have done those first, I'd have been in a far better position, but I couldn't have done them because it just wasn't available at the time. So, you know, you always look back and you think, oh, you know, I'd have done that differently. But at the time, like I say, you're learning from your own experiences on a day-to-day basis. So in a roundabout sort of a way, it was a real positive experience.
Yeah, and you had a couple of coaching jobs afterwards with Bradford and Grimsby before you ended up in what I presume. Are you still working with, I mean, what exactly are you doing now? Are you still working with the Premier League?
Yeah, I'm what you call a club support manager. I work with Manchester United, Liverpool, Newcastle, and for the last 4 years it's been Sunderland, but now it's Burnley, because Burnley's obviously just round the corner from me. I support them on basically the implementation of the elite player performance plan that's been implemented over the last couple of years, and you know, it's an ongoing thing. Youth development is very close to my heart, because obviously my background as well. So it's a real interesting role. We get a lot of criticism in this country for not producing good young players, and it's totally false. It's totally untrue. There's some really, really good young players out there. But unfortunately, it's just about getting them into the first team that's the final hurdle, you know. And I was always fortunate with Sir Alex, and obviously I never worked for him, but you know, Sir Matt as well, Sir Matt Busby, when he was the manager, that he would put his faith in young players. It gives the fans a lift, it gives the other players a lift, you know, and it gives you a vibrance. So young players will not let you down, there's no question about that. But it's just about getting into the, you know, into the first team and having a manager that's brave enough. And I suppose, you know, Brendan Rodgers, you know, he would be one that you'd look at as that has played young players recently. And, you know, you look at Raheem Sterling and people like that that coming through. Everton, another, you know, prime example with the lad Barkley and John Stones and people like that. So for me, it's a no-brainer. You have to play young players, but just convincing other managers that that's the right way to go.
Chris, Johnny here. So just talking about, obviously you say you've been around the Manchester United youth setup. There's been a bit of a clamour in recent times that Van Gaal, you know, is trying to buy success rather than bringing through the youth players. I mean, Tyler Blackett, for instance, is about the only player in terms of youth players who is playing regularly for Manchester United at the moment. Would you then encourage Man United to, you know, look to that youth setup more because, you know, 22 years ago they did have such a good youth setup that they should be trying to bring more players through?
Yeah, you've got to be honest though. You look at the starting 11. Three out of 11 have come through the youth system: Raphael, Tyler Blackett, Johnny Evans, and then they go and put Yanazai on. So four out of the squad today have come through, but you'd like to think that there would be a lot more than that. That's always been Manchester United's way. You know, right from back from when Sir Matt took over in 1938, that was always the philosophy and the culture of the club. Unfortunately, recently, for whatever reason, they've had to go out and buy a Falcao or a Van Persie or Di Maria. You know, and you just hope that the club don't lose their identity, because for 70 years, that's what's kept Manchester United going. That's what's been at the heart of the club. And you just hope that, you know, in the next 5 years, there is another Ryan coming through or a Scholesy or someone like that, and it gives everybody a lift. And, you know, like I say, the manager has to be brave enough to be able to play them. And hopefully that'll be the case.
And on that point, Chris, I don't suppose you've had much chance to see Reading over the last couple of years, but if you look at the amount of players that Reading are bringing through at the moment, I mean, I think sort of we had 12 out of the 15, 17 match day players that have come through the academy recently. So definitely with Reading at the moment, they're bringing their youth players into the team and they're starting. So I suppose that can only be a plus for English football and football as a whole.
I think it's, I'd be right in saying that Reading's academy, even though it's not perceived as one of the big clubs, I think it is within the, you know, the way that we see it at the Premier League and within those kind of circles, is one of the outstanding academies. There's no question about it. You know, Eamon Dolan's doing a fantastic job there as academy manager. He's doing an unbelievable job, doing everything right. And like you say, you're seeing the fruits and the rewards of that hard work. So it's, you know, it would be great to have that philosophy all over the country, and I'm sure, you know, in the long term, Reading will reap the benefits and the rewards of that, because like I say, some of the work that does go on there, and we recognise Reading as one of the top academies. There's no question about that.
I think, I suppose, the difference is with the top sides is the pressure to get results quickly, rather than you've got some time, like we were saying earlier about managers not getting enough time to be able to implement changes to a side. I suppose in the Premier League, the pressure's on them to get results, and that's where Reading haven't got as much pressure as the teams like Man United and Liverpool.
Yeah, I think that's sometimes a little bit of a cop out as well, because if you are good enough, then you should be playing whether you're 19 or whether you're 29. Doesn't make a difference. And for me to bring in just so I think sometimes they're a little bit of a stopgap as well. You know, bringing a foreigner in for £4 million, £5 million, you get far more out of playing a young player. Like I said, the fans absolutely love a young player. Love a young player coming through. The other players, the older players, they look at that and there's a vibrancy about them. You know, and also as well, in a roundabout sort of way, it buys a manager more time, because it not so much hide behind the fact that it's a young player, but it's the fact that, well, we are playing young players. And we are giving, so results, just be aware that results may be a little bit up and down, a little bit indifferent, but we are blooding young players because that's our philosophy. But in the long term, and as far as the long term future of the club's concerned, it can only be beneficial. So just stick others. So like I said, this thing about managers only having a short period of time, yeah, I think you're right. But if you do play your young players, it probably buys you a little bit more time as well.
No, yeah, just drifting back very quickly, you mentioned Brendan Rodgers. Did you have much contact with him at Reading? Because I believe he was involved in the academy setup at the time.
I think John Stevenson was around at the time.
Right, okay.
Kevin Dillon was youth team coach as well. I worked actually a little bit with Brendan Rodgers. He was a 16s coach as well. So during my rehab, he took a few sessions as well. So, yeah. But yeah, even back then, Darius Henderson, Adam Lockwood, some good players who went on to have decent careers came through that youth system, And so I think it's always been, a good youth setup. But obviously now I think it's really doing very, very well.
Absolutely. Well, a couple of final questions then before we let you go. Just firstly, what have you made of Reading just as a club in general over the past few years? Obviously, I can imagine you're a busy man, not got time to follow them closely, but your general impression of them over the last few years and what you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, did very well in the Premier League, unfortunately. Couldn't quite sustain it in there, but I look at when I was there, 14, 15 years ago when, with all respect, it was struggling down the bottom of the first division. And now it's a club where you'd expect, all right, you're not expecting to get promotion every year, but you're expecting to challenge him for promotion to the Premier League every year. And I think with the money that's around now, that if you could get into the Premier League and sustain it, there's nothing to say. You look at your Stokes and your Sunderlands and your West Broms, Reading can't sustain that, so it's obviously moving in the right direction, and hopefully it'll continue to do that.
Yeah, and then finally, then what's next for Chris Casper? I mean, is this what you're hoping to stay in long term, or are you itching for a return to management or coaching? What does the future hold?
No, I've got a very interesting role at the Premier League, and I'm grateful for that. I'm very, very confident that youth development and young players in the future will, for one, play a major part in the Premier League, but two, hopefully in the future of England as well. And I want to be a part of that. And I can see a big change in the youth system, even over the last 2 or 3 years. And I think this is a long-term, it is a long-term project. So, I want to be part of that. And, like I say, it's something that I'm excited. It's a challenging job. It's a very, very good role, and I really enjoy it, which is the most important thing.
Brilliant. So if someone turns around and offers you a manager's job tomorrow, you wouldn't be tempted?
No, I don't think so. No.
Well, it's been fantastic to talk to you. Said some good memory. I suppose actually one final question, if I can, is that what's your favourite memory of your 2 years at Reading? Then, if you had to pick a moment,
I think. That's a good question, actually.
it was the greatest spell for the club, was it?
There wasn't that many to me. I would have said a goal, but I didn't even get a goal. Some of the games. I think probably what I'm going to say is, I don't know whether many people will remember it, but I will. Was beating Man City 1-0 away. Was a fantastic game for me personally. Kid Williams scored, and we beat them 1-0 at Main Road. So that was probably the highlight. Yeah,
it wasn't moving down south then, Chris.
And that as well. Yeah, yeah.
not a fan of Utopia.
No. I'll try and stay out of there. Yeah.
I think the wise thing, Aid Williams tells a few interesting stories of his times there. So we'll leave it at that. Good news, then. Chris, as I said, thank you very much for giving up your time this Sunday evening to talk to us, and all the very best for the future.
No problem. All the best, guys.
Thanks very much, Chris. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/the Tarlhurst End.
Right, welcome back. Guys, just your thoughts on speaking to Chris there. I said many thanks for him taking the time. It's such a nice thing that the footballers are prepared to give their time over. We are just a just a fan-run podcast. I can't pay people or anything. It's nice to, you know, that he's prepared to give up half an hour on a Sunday evening just to chat over his career.
And as we said off air, it was good value as well. And we could have carried on forever with discussions about youth players and finishing the career early and what is a fallout good enough in the Premier League. But no, again, we don't want to, he's giving up his Sunday afternoon.
And with all the stories you hear about, you know, footballers that have had success at clubs and made big moves and, you know, fizzle out and get into all sorts of trouble or, you know, financially or in their personal lives. It's nice to, you know, he's had to deal with a traumatic event, you know. When he said I was 24, you know, that struck home. I mean, I'm 20. I consider myself, you know, fairly young still at 28.
Young gun.
But to think that, you know, your football career like that, you go from winning a European youth tournament with England and playing at Old Trafford to that's it, no more.
Yeah.
You know, it's heartbreaking, and it's fantastic to see he's bounced back. And, you know, again, you know, you get sacked from a Football League job, but again, you know, it must be easy to get disillusioned with the game. You must start thinking, you know, what have I done to deserve this? But
he stayed in football, you know, and I think with footballers, that passion for the game does not go. And, you know, obviously he's found a brilliant way to sort of stay around it and hopefully bring through the generation of the future.
Yeah, and he alluded to himself, basically one door closed, another door opens, and it looks like he's doing all right for himself.
Exactly. So. I'm only disappointed he didn't mention how much he enjoyed playing alongside the likes of Elroy Cromier, Jimmy Crawford.
Yeah, Van der Quack.
Andy Burnell.
Yeah, the Scottish lads we signed.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's where it all went
wrong. The fact it took so long for him to think of a positive memory
tells you all you need to know.
Yeah, such a tough time. You know, he was right though. They did have a few players. Some of our younger listeners might not remember. I was speaking to some members of the Tarlis editorial team earlier, and quite a few of them had even watched him already when Chris was playing. But, you know, the likes of Grant Brebner and stuff, there were some good young players there.
I was a mascot. I had my picture taken with Grant Brebner.
Jimmy Mack was alright. Jimmy McIntyre was a decent Fleck. Enough. Yeah,
Fleck was well past his prime. He's not a good younger player.
Yeah. But in general, there's not too many we can call out as good players from New
Anyway, Canada. As I said, thanks very much again to Chris. And we'll hopefully get that up as a standalone interview, the same way we have with Simon Osborne and John Halls. So we're crisscrossing the eras of Reading footballers.
We are.
Got one from the 90s, one from the early noughties, one from the 10s. What are we calling the 2010s? 2010s? Tenzies.
The tenors.
Yeah. One from the tenors. Anyway, on that note, let's... tenors. We have had some questions in from yourselves over the past few weeks. Thank you very much to those of you who submitted them, as you've heard in the sting. At the Tarlhurst End is our Twitter. thetarlhurstend@gmail.com is the email. And facebook.com/thetarlhurstend. We'll start with Chris Hartley, who alluded to this question earlier. He said, do you guys feel that inadvertently we now have a team that has a better balance fit by selling Morrow and Alfie? And do we think the signing of Norwood spells the end for Guthrie, considering his contract is up at season's end? Let's talk about the first point then. Do you think we've got a bit more of a balanced squad since getting rid of Morrison and Lafondre?
I don't know if we've got a more balanced squad, but we've certainly got a better squad if everyone's fit, which they're not at the moment.
I mean, the thing is, I think we made the point on the previous podcast, neither of those two transfers were necessarily... I mean, you know, Alfie, we had to sell him because...
Jack Mann was banging on the door.
And Morrison, we sold him because we had a good enough offer, I think. I don't think we needed the money from those sales to fund new players, if that sort of makes sense. Although, sort of
I'd like to hope it is going to fund new players, but...
You know, I think the money would have been there anyway, sort of thing. We just get an offer for Morrison and they say, yes, buy your hand off. And
I think, once again, Reading have got good money for average Championship footballers to move
it. They're both on the bench on...
Yeah, and they will stay on the bench. Alfie's a bench player. Yeah. He was here, he will be there.
It's a question for me, then. For you, just quickly... What squad would you take? The one that finished last season or the one we've got at the moment?
Now, definitely.
Yeah, I very much agree. And as we mentioned, Norwood versus Guthrie. This is a debate we're planning to have on the Tarlhurst End website. So, you know, this is what we call a tease. We're not going to go too much into it here. But you mentioned earlier, Johnny, you can't see Guthrie and Norwood in the same team. So who stays?
I think Norwood stays because he's got a bit more steel in him. You know, he's not one of these players. I don't think he has to be. We saw with Guthrie, he had to sort of be the orchestrator of everything. He had to be right at the centre of everything. Whereas I think Norwood can work in a two-man midfield and sort of, you know, still ping his passes around, but he can get himself about, he can make a tackle, he can make a simple pass. I think he's got a lot more about him than Guthrie does. They've both got immense passing quality, let's not doubt that.
Yeah, they're both good players. I think Norwood's on the rise, though, whereas Guthrie's on the fall.
He's only got a year left on his deal, Danny Guthrie. Do you extend it at this moment in time?
I think if they get in the Premier League, they'll probably extend it.
If they stay down now?
No, I don't think. I don't think they can afford to pay his wages for another year.
He's been very injury prone.
And he's very injury prone. That's what I'm saying. Let's face it. If you look at Guthrie's Reading career, there's been quite a few highs and lows, isn't there? Mm. But more lows than there's been highs in general.
Yeah.
So I think Guthrie, again, it's good because his position's up for grabs. Because let's face it, Guthrie started every week if he was fit till more recently because he was the only ball-playing midfielder we had. But now we don't need him so much. So again, it pushes him to improve himself and it pushes Norwood as well because he knows he's got a good player on the bench waiting to get
him. Let's not forget that he came on at Wigan and changed the game, won a man of the match.
Yeah,
yep.
Very true. And George Williamson tweets him with, he's got the best Twitter handle, by the way, of Talk Murty to Me. and he asked, what is our strongest centre midfield partnership? He said, for me, it's three from Norwood, Guthrie, Williams and Karachan. Can't leave one out, though. And again, I'm going to keep my silence because I'm going to explain this hopefully in the coming weeks on the website. But,
well, it's extremely hard to argue with that. And the great thing is he's picked four players that you can't take one out of and there's only three positions. So again, it's great for the squad if you can do that.
Yeah, that's what we call sitting on the fence.
No, if I was going to do it, then I'd probably, at the moment, on form alone, I'd put Norwood, Williams and Jemmin.
But then, who'd you put in the attacking midfield?
It'd be Williams.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, let's see if he can do that job.
So you have to drop leave one Cox and Mackie and Blackman.
Yeah. Isn't it great, though, we have a conversation like this rather than... Oh, God.
Rather than, who do we put in the
team? Who's actually got two working... Who's got two working legs?
Then you've got McCleary as well to come back into the side, haven't you?
Yeah. So absolutely.
There's plenty going on.
Right, Bucks Royal, one of our assistant editors at the website, tweets in saying, is it important that we get an experienced defender in on loan? I say yes.
As it stands at the moment, you'd have to say yes.
You'd want someone very experienced around the club to help guide through these younger players like Cooper. I mean, Pierce is going to be a good
not a gawks. Don't worry about that. You know what I mean? There's experience and there's over the hill. So no, let's not go mad. But yeah, certainly someone who's sort of 29, 30, like Anton Ferdinand would be.
Except one that plays football.
Yeah, regularly. Or at least once a year.
Anyway, that's very, very brief, but I'm saying yeah. Ben Print says, one, do you reckon the stadium will be renamed? Two, should there be a statue of Sir John at the stadium? And three, what is the soup of the day versus Wolves? Well, let's start with the most important of those questions. I don't know the soup menu, the soup choices.
Soup no. Watch.
Yeah, I understand Johnny's got some inside sources on Soup Watch.
Oh, really?
He occasionally gets a tip off.
Oh, yeah. Does he?
He makes a killing on the soup market.
I bet he does.
You can tell I'm tired by the standard of my jokes at this time. I have been up since 1 a.m. anyway, on to the serious questions. Do we reckon the stadium will be renamed and should there be a statue of Sir John? I'm not so sure about a statue.
No.
I wouldn't mind whatever happens to the stadium naming rights, I wouldn't be against a stand being named after him.
Yeah. Brick in the wall, £25.
Getting gold plating on that for 15 extra.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Well, the likes of Maurice Evans and Roy Chanter have got plaques.
I don't know. It's not. I think it's one of those things you get when you die, unfortunately.
Yeah, unless in general, like Sir Alex or something like that. But
yeah, it's a little bit different. But I think in general, I'm sure he will get a statue at some point, but not now.
What about the naming rights?
I don't know what the deal is. So whether is he kept it? He's still floating around the club, so I'd be surprised if he'd give that away.
He's now co-chairman, isn't he? Mm. And
but he doesn't have any practical power, though, does he? He doesn't own any of the.
It might have been part of the deal that the stadium stays as it is.
Yeah. But he doesn't own any of the club now, does he?
No, he's got none. And said this one we left out from News Bites, and I apologise for that, but. I said the takeovers. I've left it out because I'm so sick of talking about the takeover. But basically, it's as you were with the Thai consortium. The only news was that Samrat Vantikitsada, whose name had been floating around for a long time as the face of the deal, has dropped out for whatever reason. And it's now Sasima is the co-chairwoman.
Yeah.
And she seems to be fronting it.
Yeah, it's still a little bit strange here, isn't it?
We'll bring you a bit more. I said the unfortunate thing is with these guys, and we've been saying all along, is that you're at the mercy of. You can't really find out too much about them until they've actually gone going about their business, then it's too early to sell. But as I said, stay tuned to the website because we'll have some more insight analysis as we get it. But, when we do know more. But yeah, sorry, going back to the naming rights then, on the presumption that, say, they're up, you know, Sir John doesn't have an objection to it, would you mind the stadium being renamed?
I don't care, to be honest.
Do you want to see it at the Kit Kat Stadium?
Yeah, no.
The Courage Bowl?
It doesn't bother me. It's not like Elm Park, you know what I mean? I don't have that, although I love my club, I don't have that much affiliation to a ground named after a chairman, to be honest.
No, I think you can always sort of call it the Mad Stag, really.
That's what gets called in now. Yeah. And that's what we continue to get called, I expect, forever.
Yeah, and to be honest, if it gives you extra money for the sake of slapping a name on it, it's a no-brainer. What would you rather have, a new centre-back or...
Sell our backside to the devil to a new player, wouldn't we, let's face it.
Yeah. Depends if it's Gylfi Sigurdsson.
Or Drenta.
Oh, dear. Anyway, moving on. Mark Sugar, regular Twitter into the show.
Yeah.
Thanks for getting in touch again. He said, how would you grade our start to the season? That's interesting.
What grading system are you using?
ABCD, or out of 10?
Let's go out of
10. I got a 10, yeah. Okay. With 1 being the worst and 10 being the best.
I think in the circumstance, I'd give it an 8.
Mm, yeah.
With the amount of injuries.
In the circumstance, I'd give it about a 7, yeah.
Yeah, I'd probably say a 7 just because I think the Huddersfield game just takes a little bit of a shine off it for me.
A light off it.
Yeah, there's been a couple of games and a couple of performances that haven't quite been up to standard. We talked earlier about Millwall when we were under the cosh for about 60 minutes and somehow snuck a win.
And Ipswich at home, who's under the cosh for a whole half and managed to sneak a win.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd say 7, but I'd say above average.
I think the good thing is they're all fighting for each other. And despite the fact that we haven't got anywhere near our first 11... they're still getting results, and I think that can only be a good thing. So for that, you'd have to give them 7.
Yeah. And this next question in from Trevor Mossman sort of links into what I was just about to put to you guys. He says, we should temper craving promotion until we're ready to compete in the Prem. Can't control it, but next season would be too soon, in my opinion. And this links into what I was going to say, because I was about to ask you, what's your ambition for this season now?
I still think there's more to come for it, and I think they could quite easily... go up. They could easily stay down, don't get me wrong. It's a championship for it. But I think at their best, Reading are still one of the better sides in this division.
So you think that Reading should... what would you be happy with position-wise?
What do you mean?
If they finished out of the playoffs, are you considering this a bad season then?
No, because you'd have to then you'd be able to sell it as a development season, you know, like they're alluding to there. But I think Reading have got more than enough to get at least in the playoffs. And even.
So you'd want to see them top half then?
Yeah, I think with the players they've got, they should be in the top 8.
Okay, Johnny?
I'd say it would be an unsuccessful season if we weren't in the playoff shout with 3 or 4 games left.
If
we're sort of, you know, top 9, top 10, like we were end of the last season against Burnley with Brighton, you know, winner goes in the playoffs sort of thing. I think in terms of going up this season / next season... it wouldn't be too bad. I mean, you look at what Burnley and Leicester have done. They haven't gone out and broken the bank. I mean, you compare them.
I don't ever understand this argument. Sorry, with all due respect, Trevor. I don't ever get this argument of, oh, you don't want to go up too soon.
You've got to take the money.
You've got to go up. But, and this is the thing, because Burnley, they've got pretty much the same squad as they had last year. Leicester, they brought in Ojoa. Look what he's done.
Yeah. If you find the right Cambiasso.
Yeah, look what he's done as well. You know, if you find the right players, but you keep this integral squad together...
yeah,
you can do well.
And it's what Reading did when they went up in 05-06, didn't they? They added Solky Hyun, gave him a little bit. And you just tinker with it. Their problem was that you need to know when to refresh it, and they didn't in the second season. So, I said, I'm sorry, Trevor, I do take your point. I think, you know, Reading would probably be better 12 months down the line, but they could just as easily have their best players pinched. You know, someone comes in for a beater, someone comes in for a
cool
Hector, cool, and then suddenly you're sat there going, well...
yeah, that's what happens. Yeah. You will lose your best players because they are young and they've got good resale value. Exactly.
Go up and then worry about the next thing.
That's it.
And on the younger players, Matt Williams tweets us in saying, Mystic Meg time, guys. Which centre-back do you reckon will have the brighter future, Hector or Cooper? No fence sitting allowed.
Hector.
Instant. Johnny.
Haven't seen enough of Cooper. I'd say Hector at the moment, because how old's Hector? 22?
About that, yeah.
I think Hector's a proper footballer, reads the game really well, his age he is now, and he's got a lot to learn, and I've got Fuller at times bullied him the other night, but again, he's learning his game, but I think there's a couple of incidents where I thought Morrison would have gone for that ball and never got anywhere near it, where Hector stepped back.
Managers are always going, especially with the way the game is going now, are always going to value a player who's more comfortable with the ball at his feet, and Hector... as I said, it's very early on Cooper, and this is not Cooper bashing at all. But at the moment, Hector looks like a player who's just more comfortable. But that's not saying there's not a role for Cooper. You look at, you know, players like Brad Hangeland and players like that, bigger, taller players, there's always going to be a role for
them. That'd be funny. You could quite easily see them two being your centre backs for the next 4 or 5 years if you could manage to keep hold of them, because they both complement each other.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, with Cooper, he's come through this youth side, which are playing in the Adkins mould, which is play it around the back four, be comfortable. Yeah, so there's no doubting that he's not comfortable with the ball. It's just the extra bit of pace, the extra bit of gamesmanship that comes with playing professional football rather than playing at the youth level.
I mean, Hector's built like a... Not Hector, but Cooper has built like a man as well. And he's solid, isn't he? I mean, he's a huge bloke.
He's a giant. Giant of a man for a very young age as well. But I'd probably go for Hector at the moment. But as I said, it's very early, having only seen probably 110 minutes of Cooper.
Yeah. I mean, he obviously trusts him, Cooper, because whenever we need to get a result, we put him on the pitch, wouldn't he? Because he knows that...
that's batting down the hatches.
That's batting down the hatches.
He's the anti-Alfie. He's the defensive version of Alfie. Yeah, anyway, that just about wraps up your tweets and emails. As I said, at the Tullhurst End is our Twitter, facebook.com/thetullhurstend, and thetullhurstend@gmail.com. Keep your questions coming in all through the week. And if you do use Twitter, try and use #TTEpodcast. Makes it a lot easier to sort through. But thanks very much. And we'll just finish up with any other business.
The Tullhurst End Podcast.
Any other business.
Right, time for some any other business just before we leave you. Thanks for sticking with us to this point. I realise it's been a bumper show, but these things tend to be, especially when you have such a good guest as Chris, and we have three games to talk about.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, and if you stay tuned to the very end, you'll get a special prize code, which entitles you to listen to the next episode of the Tullhurst End Podcast. Right, let's preview the next couple of games then. Coming up on Tuesday night, we've got a long trip to Derby for the Capital One Cup third round. Touched on it a bit earlier, Westy. You're not ruling out a Reading win in this one, then?
I don't think you can in the Capital One Cup. Anything can happen. We see some right odd results at the best of times. So, again, it depends how seriously Derby are taking it.
Johnny, how seriously do you take this from a Reading point of view? Do you play the... Obviously, they haven't got a lot of depth at the moment.
I think we could pick the side pretty much.
Yeah, but do you give, you know, some of the, I would say, fringe players, I guess, more game time? Or do you stick with the same sort of lineup that played on Saturday?
You'd expect, wouldn't you, Pogge and Guthrie to start.
Yeah, but I mean, this is the problem. You know, you're going to be starting Anderson, presumably. Yeah.
Yep.
You're going to be starting Gunter, presumably. You're going to be...
Well, but do you start the likes of Long and people like that?
I don't think you necessarily go... No disrespect, but I don't think you go that low, because I think you've still got to put out a good squad. But you know, especially in the midfield and in the forward positions, we've got a lot more depth now. You know, we talked about Murray and Pogge up front. We've got Blackman and Mackey and Cox, everyone in
Taylor.
The forward. Yep. Taylor as well, Edwards, Guthrie, Cool. They could potentially...
Yeah, they could be starting, yeah.
So I don't think the back four will be changed that much, simply because we don't have that much depth there.
I would like to see Chris Gunter rested. I think he's looking tired. He's played every minute of every game this season, and he's played for Wales as well.
Isn't Sean Cummings injured at the moment?
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. I would just give the likes of either Griffin or Long a game.
Yeah. Maybe he might do that. Even a beater, you don't really want to be risking him in
World Cup
games, do you? I think they will, though. I think in general, he has took it relatively seriously. So I think you will see Guthrie start. I think you see Pogge Rebner at start. Other than that, I think probably Nor would have dropped out, because he can't play anyway, can he? Is he cup-tied?
I'm not sure what the Murray and Norwood status is cup-tied.
Yeah, I think it might be. And obviously, I can't remember his name now. It's gone out of my head.
Mackey,
yeah. Obviously, Mackey's probably cup-tied as well, isn't he? So they'll drop out. So yeah, there will be a few changes, but I don't think it changes too much.
Okay, then. These won't count in our official prediction league, but your score predictions?
Oh, God. It could be anything.
I can... 3-1, we'll go down.
I was going to say 3-1, actually. So I'm going to say 2-1 Reading win.
2-1 Reading win.
I'm saying we'll lose. So
yeah, 3-1 Derby win. I'm going to say 1-0 Derby.
I'll see my predictions, whatever I was thinking about.
Yeah. And we'll talk about that in just a second then. But back to league issues on Sunday. And it's nice to have Wolves back in the league. I'd rather not be playing them at the moment, given the form they're in.
I can remember a special day. Was it Sunday we played them when it was on telly? That day we turned
Meridian,
them over.
The Meridian match.
Yeah, it was a good day that was.
Or the big match, whatever it was called back then, with Brian. Brian Moore,
that's it, yep. And then Dave at the back then. DeWolf, was it?
DeWolf. John DeWolf.
John DeWolf.
Yeah. 4-2 win.
Happy days.
Just after McGee had gone. That was good times. Anyway, look up if you haven't seen that game. Look it up. Look it up in YouTube. Brilliant. So Wolves come to the Medeiros Stadium. They're in fantastic form at the moment.
Surprising they started so well.
Only lost once this season. Yeah. Well, you say that, but how often now have we seen teams that come up from League One and just carry the momentum forward?
Oh, we did.
Last season, Bournemouth, you know, went on a late charge, get near the playoff zone.
Mm.
You know, the likes of Norwich and Southampton have gone on to get promotion.
Brentford aren't doing too badly this season, are they?
You know, if you have the momentum, and especially for a team like Wolves that was still had a lot of financial clout from the parachute payments.
Let's face it, Wolves have had a rough time of late, and then it's probably about time they started moving back the other way because, like I said, they are a big club.
Yeah, as I said, it's not probably the best time for Reading to play them, and obviously a lot will depend on how many injuries we pick up between.
Yeah.
It seems to be a matter of how many rather than if these days.
Is anyone fit?
So a lot of ifs and buts going into the game, but just generally looking at the strength of the two sides, is this a game Reading again should be aiming to win, or is this already you're sort of saying, well, Wolves are a good side, if we get a point I'm not.
I think at home in the Championship you should be looking to win most of your games. I don't see that you shouldn't. Again, it will be tough, it'd be tight, and it'd be like all the other Championship matches, could go either way, but hopefully we'll get the win.
Yeah, I've not got a lot of former Royals, although in saying that, James Henry's bound to have a stormer.
They got rid of Kevin Doyle, didn't they? Just now, to keep you up.
He's gone. No, he's gone to Palace. He's Glenn Murray's replacement at Palace. That one snuck through on very late on deadline day.
A bit of charm life, really, Mr. Doyle.
Neil Warnock does like to overload on his strikers, though.
Yeah.
Brian Dean is working his way
to
Selhurst Park as we speak.
Half a chance.
And Danny Webber.
He's to sign him everywhere. Sorry, Danny Webber,
he's actually signed Andy Johnson, hasn't he?
He has, yeah. As I say, he's living in 2007.
That tells you everything.
Jesus. Johnson and Doyle. Anyway, that's enough of Colin on this show. Predictions then, guys, for the Wolves game. These will count in our official predictions poll to the extent that I'm going to write them in right now. Although I haven't written Wolves, so
I'm going to say they're going to put on a show at home in front of TV cameras. I'm going to say they win 2-1.
That's a good show. Reading are going to win 2-1.
Yeah, right show they're going to put on. Last gasp.
They were talking about it for centuries.
A 2-1 Reading win. Johnny.
I'm going to say 3-2. We'll have another thriller in Manila at the Mad Stand.
Yeah.
In Manila. No. You?
1-1.
Okay, well, if you do goals, as your betting syndicate, then stick that one in.
Yeah. Over 4.5 goals.
0-0.
Indeed. Well, we can't all predict positively, because when we do, it ends in tears. This past weekend for Sheffield Wednesday, the three of us and Charles all predicted at least a draw, and obviously we were all wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Going into game 8 of the Prediction League, Charles Watts is currently top.
Saying that, though, it was all close predicting a draw, weren't we? Because let's face it, it probably should have been.
Charles Watts leads with 6 points. He correctly guessed 3-0 from Fulham.
Yeah, but wait there, wasn't there some dispute over this? Wasn't this in retrospect, I would have said it.
Charles has been a very busy man. I've used this time to say very big congratulations to Mr. and Mrs. Watts for the birth of their first daughter. But they're all doing well, and Charles has been off for a couple of weeks from work, understandably. So getting his predictions and stuff has been a bit tricky. So I texted him before the game, the Fulham game, on Saturday, saying, what do you think about the next couple of games? He got back to me about 6 o'clock in the evening saying, I think Reading will beat Fulham 3-0.
Yeah, you see what I'm saying? I'm in funny here, right? We've got three greens on this screen that I see in front of me.
Correct score predictions, right? Yeah.
Johnny done his retrospectively, 4-0 defeat.
Mine's on record.
We've got a 3-0 retrospective. Oh, I got it right all of a sudden. I wish I could go into a book and said, that's what I was going to do, and I told him.
Mine is a genuine. You heard it on this show 2 weeks ago. I said Reading to beat Millwall 3-2, and we did.
Yours was on record, to be fair.
On the record.
Mine was on record via the medium of voice to someone I work with.
Yeah, who? Who is this mysterious person?
It's like your mate that was always used to...
Dennis,
It's like all these transfers that Reading nearly get over the line.
Yeah, it's like signing Sigurdsson on deadline day that nearly got put through.
Oh, God. This is an aside, and we've gone on too long, but I'm going to tell it anyway. I was looking back through some interviews, and I listened to what Anton Zagarić said on the last day of the Prem season when we got relegated.
Yeah.
And listening through through hindsight, you just think, what? You're so full of it. It was like, oh, we were so close signing some big players and stuff. You're just like, You want to throttle him anyway.
We could all try. It doesn't mean you're going
to
sign him. Does
yeah.
It?
I would like to sign Guilfoyle Sigurdsson instead of Lionel Messi.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say we could try and throttle him, but we can't. I don't know where he is.
Yeah, no, he's does. Also probably got some very strong men around him.
Yeah. Yes. But to be fair to him, he did say he was going to sign international class footballers. He bought Bridge in and Washington Drenta.
And Danny Williams.
Yeah, Danny Williams. Injured. There you go. They're internationals, though. He didn't lie.
He did not lie. Indeed. Anyway, Charles leads with 6 points. I'm second with 5. Johnny then is on 4. And Westy propping up the table or, you know, waiting, lying in wait.
Exactly.
On 2.
This is 7 out of 10 season for me on the predictions.
Indeed. Well, we'll see who gets that
there's
right
more
next.
More to come.
as we mentioned, big congratulations to Charles on the birth of his daughter. He's back at work on Wednesday, so hopefully we'll record an episode of the Tarlhurst End Extra podcast looking ahead to this weekend's game on Friday. I'll confirm it on the Twitter feed. And just remains to be seen a couple of bits of site news. First, guys, we're very close to signing Sigurdsson. We're very close to an award.
Oh, wow, well, very close.
Well, I say by close, we're close to the shortlist of getting on the shortlist.
Oh, close to a shortlist.
But we can be so much closer if you take the time to vote for us. Head over to thetarlhurstend.com. There is an article explaining how you can vote for us. We're eligible for the Football Blogging Awards and for the Football Supporters Federation Awards.
Do we get a free meal out of this?
Possibly.
Oh, nice.
Fish and chips.
Love a freebie.
Well, I don't even know. I'll make bold. I'll tell you what, if we get nominated, I'll for the podcast category, I'll see what I can sort out.
Transport not included, though.
No. That's going to be big.
season
only soft drinks.
Yeah, some dodgy deal.
But yeah, no, seriously, guys, if you do enjoy what we do on the podcast or on the website, you know, it would mean a lot to the guys who write for us and stuff. If you would put us forward, it doesn't take very long at all. It's literally clicking on one button and then you send a tweet off and it gets counted. So please, if you've got the time to do that, very much appreciate it. And just finally as well, on the website, we've also introduced, as mentioned, things like the stats desk. We've got content going up pretty much every day at the moment. So plenty to look at on thetarlhurstend.com. So keep it in your bookmarks. And also, just a bit of a plea as well, join in the conversation. You know, we have a lot of articles and there is a comment section. Again, anyone can join the website. It takes about 10 seconds to do. And we had about 85 comments in our game day thread the other day. So it was a good bit of banter. So, it's some familiar faces, you know, wasn't a great big pool of people, but, you know, still quite interesting. And just check on the thread for a story about Royal Hoops and what happens to him when he hears Tim Deller's commentary.
Oh,
I'm going to leave it at that.
Yeah, it's good.
Again, a tease. Right, that is it. We have been...
sounds like it is a tease, isn't it?
Yeah. Right, we've been rambling on for far too long. That is the end of episode 35 of the Tarlhurst End podcast. On behalf of the three of us, goodbye and come on you arse.